Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. For over 20 years, Ira Shapiro served as a senior staffer in the U.S. Senate, working with an array of Democratic senators from Jacob Javits and Gaylord Nelson to Robert Byrd and Jay Rockefeller. Shapiro has since authored two previous books on the world's greatest deliberative body, the U.S. Senate, and his latest recounts its failure to act as a constitutional check against executive overreach from the presidency. The Betrayal, How Mitch McConnell and the Senate Republicans Abandoned America, reviews the leadership of McConnell and the Senate's acquiescence to abuses of power during the Trump administration, including the former president's ties to Russia and his backing that country over the U.S. intelligence community, not investigating Trump's alleged obstruction of justice in FBI Director James Comey's firing, and exoneration of Trump in not one but two impeachments, the first for abuse of power, for blackmailing a foreign power to dig up dirt on a political opponent, the second for excusing the then former president's role in leading an insurrection against their very institution. In addition to his work in the Senate, Shapiro's worked in the U.S. Trade Representative's office and served as chief negotiator for the U.S. with relations with Japan and Canada. His previous books include The Last Great Senate, Courage and Statesmanship in Times of Crisis, and Broken, Can the Senate Save Itself and the Country? The latest book is titled The Betrayal, and he joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Ira Shapiro, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Rich, it's great to be with you. Thanks so much.
You write that the failure of the U.S. Senate in your book, Betrayal, to act as a balance against excessive executive power during the Trump administration was the most catastrophic failure of government in American history. That's a pretty strong statement. What leads you to that conclusion?
My statement is based on a couple of things. One, it has to do first with the fundamental responsibility that senators have, I believe, to act as a check on a president who is overreaching, and particularly a check when the president's abuse of power starts to appear as very serious and potentially authoritarian, threatening the constitutional order. And I believe that's what happened with President Trump. And therefore, I believe that the senators, whose fundamental responsibility that the framers had in mind to check an overreaching president, they had a responsibility, in my view. And number two, we have to remember that 2020 was a crisis year for our country, particularly the worst of the COVID pandemic, racial divisions and racial reckoning after George Floyd's murder, and the evidence that President Trump on the subject of the pandemic was quite unhinged, And I think Oklahoma residents remember the debate about the super spreader event when President Trump summoned invited his supporters to come to Tulsa, I guess it was Tulsa.
Yes, it was.
To rally indoors at the height of COVID. So additionally, there was a lot of other evidence that he was unhinged on the subject. But additionally, throughout the year, it became increasingly evident from his own words and actions that he was planning not to accept the results of an election if he lost it. If you add those factors up, I think it was a terribly dangerous time and a threat to our constitutional order. And the Senate, by and large, did nothing after passing the initial CARES Act in March, but they sort of stood aside and compounded it, in my view. They sprung into action only once after Ruth Bader Ginsburg died. They sprung into action to confirm another Supreme Court justice 8 days before the election. I think it was a catastrophic failure of government. And we saw just how catastrophic it was on January 6th.
And really, that lays at the heart of what Mitch McConnell, who you write about quite extensively in The Betrayal, how his leadership of Senate Republicans have worked. It's not been necessarily policy goals, except for maybe a couple. One is unfettered money in elections, and two would be transforming the American judiciary into image of his suiting. How different is he from other past majority leaders or party leaders in the Senate?
That's a great question, Rich. And at the heart of my book is the view, which I think I document, that McConnell is profoundly different from past Senate leaders. Senate leaders in the past, Democratic and Republican, have always played a special role and felt the need and the responsibility to work across the aisle with the other party, to work as much as possible with the president, whether or not it was in their party, and really to make the Senate work by bringing people together as opposed to breaking them apart. And my basic criticism of McConnell, one of them, is that he's essentially an architect of division. He has never accepted the role of a Senate leader to bring people together. And that was true, certainly true in the Trump years, but it was true for 8 years of Obama's presidency as well. And to a large extent, it's still true, although I give him credit at the moment for going to Ukraine and supporting aid to Ukraine. But in general, you can go down the list. He's been an architect of division on everything. And I would add to your list of his priorities, your list was accurate, but I would add tax cuts for the wealthy, number one, and almost constant effort to repeal the Affordable Care Act, which he was by and large thwarted in by the narrow margin. So I think he's essentially a bad actor.
Well, let me ask you, there are so many parts of the Senate which encourages division, the respect for the minority. Have other majority leaders at the time McConnell is the minority leader at this point, nominally, with a 50-50 Senate and the vice president in control of the opposite party. But have other majority leaders tried to, again, use the divisions that are naturally inherent in the Senate in the same way McConnell has?
Senate's a complicated place, as you point out. But the answer, I think, is no. And when you use the phrase, I think you said, Rich, respect for the minority, you're supposed to respect the minority. You're not supposed to steamroll the minority party. Indeed, that's supposed to help, in theory, that helps produce compromises that bring about legislation that can command broad support. That's the way the Senate was supposed to work. And one of the things that frustrates me about McConnell, if you were to pick up his memoir, 2016 memoir, and you read the first few pages, he talks about how the Senate's the only place that the parties have to come together to pass legislation that command broad national support. And then he says, and I think I'm almost quoting, the Senate is not an all or nothing place. And anyone who doesn't understand that shouldn't be a leader in the Senate or of anything else. So he knows how it's supposed to work. And one of my criticisms is he does the exact opposite.
Mm. Now, in your book, you write of numerous senators who have, as they have left office, have decried the loss of comedy and the lack of bipartisanship from when they first arrive and the increase in partisanship. I'm wondering if that's a sense of, the good old days were always better. You write in the beginning of the book about there were really important moments where the Senate came together. They, in the early 1950s, they confronted McCarthyism. They after years of filibuster, they were able to pass civil rights and voting rights acts in the 1960s. But we also forget that McCarthyism ran rampant, and the Senate was afraid to act until McCarthy's opinion right. numbers went down. And for years, the Senate allowed that filibuster. And it was only until they basically required them to actually filibuster every day for months did you get a civil rights bill. So, I mean, I wonder how good sure. the good old days were, because, I mean, there's certainly been plenty of partisanship and places where senators, groups of senators, have basically stopped any progress or any progress towards a given bill dead in its tracks. And still that happens today.
Well, I think your perspective is an important one. And I'm the author. My first book was called The Last Great Senate, and I sometimes of the 60s and the 70s. And I sometimes go to the point of saying, actually, it was the only great Senate. It's kind of an exceptional Senate. And your point is a good one. The Senate's always been a contentious and difficult place to make work. And I would say, I always say that the divisions between the parties since the 60s and the 70s and even the 80s have gotten much deeper and wider, right? We used to have moderate and liberal Republicans from, say, the Northeast or the Midwest, and conservative Democrats in the South. So the parties had more overlap. And now they've kind of aligned more. They're polarized. And I get that. And that makes things more difficult. But from my standpoint, that makes it more important for the senators, these 100 senators who have privileged positions in our system, to try to make more of an effort to overcome the divisions. That's on them. And so I would say they have that responsibility, but I would also say that just because there are these differences, certain people have disproportionate impact on our politics. And I would say that before, and I always emphasize, because we're so focused on Donald Trump, our politics and our government were a mess before Donald Trump came to office or ran for the presidency. This has been longstanding. And the two people that I believe history will judge to have the most impact and detrimental impact are Newt Gingrich and Mitch McConnell, in my view.
It's interesting. I've been reading several pieces recently that have looked at what we used to refer to as Trump's base. And many commentators are saying, no, it was a base before there was Trump. Trump just exploited it. And that base was there before Trump, and when Trump leaves the scene, it will still be there.
Two things I often point to, and this, by the way, I'm obviously a Democrat. I've worked with a lot of Republicans over the years, both in the Senate and in four Republican administrations. So when I say that the Republican Party has moved from conservatism to a form of radicalism or nihilism, that's a strong statement, but it's shared by many Republicans who are disillusioned with their party. So I think the two things that strike me about our politics are the long march of the Republican Party to the right, number one, and number two, the decline of the Senate as a mediating force, a moderating force, a mediating force, an effective force. Those two things, I think, are related, but it didn't have to be quite that way, because individual senators could have acted as a counterweight to that, but they haven't, and McConnell particularly has exacerbated the situation.
My guest today is Ira Shapiro. He is a former veteran Senate staffer and then worked in the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative and eventually was the chief negotiator with Japan and Canada with the rank of ambassador. He's author of several books about the U.S. Senate, and his latest is titled Betrayal, How Mitch McConnell and the Senate Republicans Abandoned America. Well, beyond impeachment, what are the main checks the Senate has to curb abuses of executive power?
Well, the Senate basically has power, general oversight power. They also have the power to confirm treaties with a two-thirds vote, and that gives them a more prominent role in foreign policy. But they have the power that comes with their stature. If you look at Sunday talk shows, the senators are not only players in the political system, they're constant commentators on it. They have weight in the system if they care to use it. And certainly McConnell has been a weighty player in the system, and the ever talkative Lindsey Graham has been a very prominent player in the system. So they have power. It's just a question of when they want to use it.
Now, with impeachment, I think when you look even back to Andrew Johnson in 1868, I believe, you know, Senate members have invariably viewed presidential impeachment as a political act, especially if the president is from your party. In Andrew Johnson's case, it was basically a unity ticket during the midst of the Civil War. Obviously, that need for unity ended when the Civil War ended and Johnson was a Democrat facing a huge majority Republican Congress. But if the president's from your own party, Senate members invariably view impeachment as a political act. Does that make it a viable check? I mean, given the fact that we've had three impeachment efforts in the last 25 years, and none of them have been close to successful, what does that say about that as a check on executive power?
It's a great question. I think that the concept of impeachment was that it would be a check because it would be used responsibly and only in very serious circumstances where the president's abuses of power threatened the constitutional order. So you're saying, and you're asking correctly, right, if the House impeaches the president and it's perceived or it is a partisan act, what happens? Well, presumably the Senate's judgment is supposed to be less partisan and more tempered. I think from my standpoint, the only, leaving aside Johnson for a moment in 1868, in more modern times, I believe the impeachment process didn't come to a final impeachment, but I think the process worked as it should in Watergate. The House was prepared to impeach President Nixon on a bipartisan basis, and the Senate was prepared to convict him. And as a consequence, Nixon resigned. I think the debate got distorted quite a bit by the Clinton impeachment, which was a partisan act, and an act where, however, Clinton's private behavior was completely wrong with respect to Monica Lewinsky, it wasn't the kind of abuse of power that affected the constitutional order. And as a consequence, the House impeached on a partisan basis, and the Senate, with a relatively thoughtful trial, rejected it. The Trump impeachments, I would argue, were different. I believe that Trump was properly impeached for trying to shake down President Zelensky by withholding military aid to force Zelensky to investigate Trump's political opponent, the Bidens, Joe Biden. I believe that was a justified impeachment, and I think the Senate had a sham trial. And in the second impeachment, if there was ever anything that justified removal of a president, it was inciting an insurrection against the government, and the Senate Republicans saved him yet again. In other words, I guess that's a long answer, but the short answer is the process did depend on the notion that senators would step up to their responsibility. And Rich, if I was wrong about anything looking at the situation in the last few years, it was my idealized view of senators and their responsibility, and my belief that if things got bad enough and the threat to our country was so acute enough, that they would step up to their responsibility. And they didn't. And that was the catastrophic failure of government.
Let me ask you, you contrast in the book how Mitch McConnell reacted with a vastly minority position at the beginning of the Obama administration, where he really managed to basically gum up the works of the Senate for that portion of time that his party was in a great minority. Compare him to what he's done with the Biden administration, because he has allowed some bipartisan efforts to get through in a 50-50 Senate where it is finely balanced. And he could absolutely gum up the sentiment completely, given that sort of 50-50 nature.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good question. I believe that Senator McConnell, and I say in the book, I think he's quite a superb strategist and tactician in pursuit of his objectives. His objectives are the ones we discussed before, and his overriding objective is his power and Republican power. So I believe that he's perfectly capable of looking at a situation and saying, I don't want the Republicans to be charged with total obstruction. I'd like to be able to point to certain things to show that we cooperated. The infrastructure bill, for instance, aid to Ukraine. And striking that balance will help us get back to power. I think his main road back to power is his view that the president in the party in power is held accountable, and if the country is angry and frustrated, the party out of power will do well. But I do think he calibrates that, and he doesn't want to have a record of doing nothing.
Let me talk a little bit about Mitch McConnell's motivations. A lot of observers, and I think you too in the book, sort of view him as a leader not in search of legislative outcomes as much as he is in search of holding power for the sake of power itself. How do you subscribe on that question?
Well, I do think he wants to hold power for the sake of power itself. And many of his longtime supporters, including his first, there's a very favorable biography of him that was written by a Kentucky, I think, lawyer and journalist, but that person wrote a favorable biography maybe 10 or 12 years ago, and by 2020, he voted for McConnell's opponent and made it clear that he was disillusioned with McConnell. But I don't say that he has no views. I believe he is a right of center. He would say he's right of center. He's conservative. Whenever the Democrats want to do something, he quickly says they're trying to Europeanize America. They're trying to socialize everything. Usually that means the Democrats are trying to give people health care and reduce the number of uninsured people. But he has views, and he also has views that he's very candid about, which is elections come, elections go, majorities shift. If you really want to move the country to the right, the courts are the most important thing. So he has views.
My guest today is Ira Shapiro. He's a former veteran Senate staffer who's now written several books about the U.S. Senate. He's also served in the office of U.S. Trade Representative, and he's currently a trade consultant. His latest book is titled Betrayal, How Mitch McConnell and the Senate Republicans Abandoned America. It's published by Roman and Littlefield. And, you lay out how during the 4 years of the Trump administration, the U.S. Senate failed to act as a balance against what you see as executive power. moving forward, what does the Senate need to do to reassert its authority as a responsible check against executive power that is in danger of violating the Constitution?
They need to become real senators. They need to understand that although they're party members, they're not supposed to simply be partisan hacks. And although they represent their states very strongly, they're not supposed to be state legislators. They're United States senators. What a privileged position. Those six-year terms, usually multiple terms, right? By the time McConnell's done, or Chuck Grassley, or Jim Imhoff, they'll serve 3, 4, 5 times as long as any president is allowed to serve. And part of that privilege, it comes with responsibilities. And that's why, and I've seen the great senators, and by the way, I'm sure you've talked with President David Boren, or Chancellor, I don't know what his role is now at the university. David Boren would have a good perspective on what senators are and what they should be, because he was a wonderful senator, as well as a wonderful governor. But there is no formula for making them better. They have to be better senators. And I stumbled onto something, Rich. I was trying to figure out what one element that was missing. And I believe that there's a biography that the great author David Marinus wrote about Vince Lombardi, the Green Bay Packer coach. And it was called When Pride Still Mattered. And what the Senate is missing is pride. That's one thing they're missing. They like, each of them likes being called senator. It's a good title, et cetera. But they have no pride in the institution. They don't know why they're there. They fall all over themselves talking about how broken it is. It's broken because they don't act like senators. And so that would be my critique. And I think it comports with the evidence. They have to rise above where they've been.
The name of the book is The Betrayal: How Mitch McConnell and the Senate Republicans Abandoned America. Ira Shapiro, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Ira Shapiro is a former U.S. Senate staffer and former negotiator in the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative. His latest book is titled The Betrayal: How Mitch McConnell and the Senate Republicans Abandoned America. It's published by Roman and Littlefield. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.